why Dror is frustrated will be understood later. But let me tell you, sort of, this is a picture of a part of the subject. And let me first tell you what's in it, assuming it is sharp, okay? But in reality, it's a bit foggy, okay? So, well, there are not tetravalent graphs, and it's a certain type of algebraic structure, okay? It has spaces, the knottings of any individual graph, and operations, delete, unzip, connect sum, and it's finitely generated, and here are the two generators, or, you know, to be honest, maybe you want the Mobius band as well. Okay, depends if you want to restrict your attention to orientable surfaces. Right, these are actually little third surfaces because they're a bit thickened. So if you want to restrict your attention to orientable ones or not. Okay? And I claim that these generate, and in fact I've proven it, but the proof relied on some other algebraic structure. Okay? And the other algebraic structure was tangled trivalent graphs. So it's trivalent graphs that are drawn inside a disk. The disk is marked in green. This is, again, an algebraic structure. It's a planar algebra, and I mentioned what a planar algebra is. You can stick things like that side by side in any planar way you wish. And it is clearly generated by these two things, the Y graph and the crossing. Okay, and again, I'm a bit informal here because really there are two types of crossings, or because, you know, you have to mark a point along the edge for each one. So it depends how the point is relative to the rest of the crossing. So I'm a bit informal. Okay, and finally, there is a third related algebraic structure that I didn't talk at all about, but it was the first of this kind to show up, and these are parenthesized tangles. So parenthesized tangles are tangles that have a distinct top, bottom and top, so they're not in the plane, or rather they're not inside circles, they're more like drawn inside squares. Okay, so there is a rectangles, I mean. So there is a distinct bottom and top. And furthermore, at the bottom there is a parenthetization, and I've indicated the parenthetization of the strands by making the distances between them appear in different scales. So this is the innermost parenthetization, and this is the outer parenthetization. Okay, so if you wish, sort of, you put dots corresponding to the bottoms of the strands, and then you parenthesize the dots as if you were multiplying them in a non-associative algebra, and you need to specify the parenthetization so that the product would make sense. So you put parentheses as such. Likewise at the top, and notice that the parenthetization at the top is different than the parenthetization at the bottom. Now, parenthesized tangles, and in between you have a tangle. Parenthesized tangles form a category, okay? And in fact, it also has some extra operations in it. So for example, the parallel of unzip would be that you can take a strand and double it, making the two daughter strand innermost in the parenthetization. Okay? So it's a category with some further operations. And again, it is finitely generated by, and the generators are, and this requires a proof, but the generators are the change of parenthetization, the associativity, if you wish, and the braiding. Okay? Now, these theories want to be equivalent, meaning one ought to be able, or one is able, but again, I'm talking about something which is a bit foggy and which makes me a bit frustrated, so I mean, I'll use is, but I'll explain why is it foggy in a minute. So one can emulate any one of these structures inside any one of the others. Okay? So, in other words, I can, well, corresponding to a tangled trivalent graph, I can make a knotted trivalent graph. And I mentioned how to do it last time, meaning you just add a shield around the tangle. So you just take the green stuff seriously as being a part of the tangle. Okay? And then the operations, you know, this is much like emulating one computer inside another computer. Okay, I mean, I'm sure you've seen these notions. Okay, you've at least heard that you can, you know, run a Macintosh inside a PC by having the appropriate emulator. So what it means is that a part of the PC is well, that you embed the memory structure of a Macintosh inside the memory structure of a PC, and for each operation that a Macintosh can do, you replace it by a sequence of operations that a PC can do. Okay? So, likewise, right, I can turn each tangled trivalent graph to be a knotted trivalent graph. And any operation between tangled trivalent graphs, so the planar algebra operations, for example, can be rewritten as a sequence of operations, so on their images here. Okay? And likewise, there are other emulations of each of these structures inside one another. Okay? And maybe I'll add a few more things before confessing where things start to go wrong. So, in some sense, this structure is entirely three-dimensional. Okay? The graphs are in R3, no other restrictions on them whatsoever. This structure is inherently two-dimensional, because it's about projections of graphs, and the operations are gluing in a two-dimensional way. Okay? And finally, in some sense, this is a one-dimensional structure. A category is a one-dimensional structure because it has a preferred time direction. Okay? So you can compose only in the time direction, not like here where you can compose in a planar way, and not like here where you can just take connect sum completely arbitrarily. Okay? So in some sense, this is the least pretty, and this is a bit prettier, and this is the prettiest. Okay? Another comment, I've actually used already the emulations. Okay? So in order to show that these elements generate KTGs, I told you that you can embed KTGs in here. What was the proof? I mean, So I mean, I can repeat the proof. I'm not quite sure how to state it in this language. Okay? So basically, what did we do? We showed that, well, essentially we've used this simulation. Okay, and maybe at some other point we can say what exactly we've used. Okay, and another point is that in each of these cases there is a finite type theory, and in each of these cases you can look for a structure preserving universal finite type invariant. So in each of these cases you get a space of core diagrams. Here these will be core diagrams on the skeleton of the graph. Here it will be here there are two variants, but one way is to take core diagrams on the skeleton of the tangle, and another way is to take core diagrams on the skeleton of the tangle, which are also allowed to have chords ending on the boundary of the tangle. So this will be sort of the shielded version. And here again, you can take core diagrams whose chords lie on the skeleton of the tangle. And in each of these cases, you can ask yourself if there is a universal finite type invariant which preserves all the relevant operations. Okay? And since you can emulate one class which in the other, the questions are roughly equivalent. Okay? And finally, once you choose, since each of these classes is finitely generated, and in fact finitely presented, so this class is the most, is the one in which it is the easiest to see that it's finitely presented, because the generators are written here, and the relations are the Rademeister moves. But anyway, since each of these, including one extra Rademeister move for the vertex, but anyway, since each of these classes is finitely presented, finding a universal finite type invariant for each one is a matter of finding the values of the generators so that they satisfy the equations. So in each case you have to solve a certain algebraic problem, and since these are nearly equivalent, these are nearly equivalent algebraic problems, and at the end they always boil down to having to solve these two equations. And part of my purpose for today is to explain these two equations. Okay? But in addition, so these are the major equations. These are the pentagon and the hexagons. And I should say that Peter, next time or maybe on or maybe next week, will tell us how these same equations arise in essentially representation theory when one studies braided monoidal categories. So, but that comes next week. Or, sorry, later. But now, maybe now I should start telling you where I've lied. Okay, so this is the picture how I wish it would be, and now I have to tell you where the lies are. Okay, so the lie is essentially that everything is a bit foggy. So I don't know. Maybe the parts of it that are already in print are less foggy. So, for example, this is completely sharp. This is a paper that I wrote in 93, 94, I don't know, a long time ago. And it's completely sharp, but it's extremely ugly, because it's a reduction to one dimension of to one dimension to a one dimensional thing of a three dimensional situation. Okay, ought not to form a category. A category is way too restricted. Okay, so you know this is completely sharp, but it's ugly. The piece about not a trivialent grasp mapping to here is completely sharp. This is the work of Murakami Ochtsuki and the work of Zuji using the Koncievich integral. And Zuji described it a few weeks ago. Okay, and this is completely sharp, but there is a bit of ugliness there, which is that you know, here you will have a D, a U, and a connect sum on the level of core diagrams. And if you look very carefully at what Zuji does, well, you do get a universal finite type invariant. D goes to D over here. Connect sum goes to connect sum over here. But U doesn't quite go to U. So you really have to deform U a little bit. You really have to deform the unzip operation here a little bit before the unzip operation here becomes the unzip operation here. And the precise deformation, again, it's somehow very minor but very annoying that you have to do it. And the precise statement is on one of the handouts that I gave today. This is this stuff about nu. Okay. What else is foggy? So when I said emulation, I resorted to an example. Okay, I explained the word emulation by referring to computers and how computers emulate one another. And this is because I don't really know what the word emulation should mean when you're talking about algebraic structures that are similar but not quite the same. So I don't really know the answer. I mean, I know what I do, but I don't know what to call it or what's the more general context in which it happens. And finally, the emulations are just like, you know, exactly like when you try to emulate a Macintosh on a PC. There will be glitches, okay? There will be bugs. So it's the same here. There are glitches, and occasionally there is an error message, and things don't quite agree. So I don't quite know how to manage correctly cups and cups over here, and the dots here, and the new factors here, and it is all a bit loose. Okay? Now, I have several things to say. First of all, you have been warned. Okay? On day one of this class, I said this class is not for everyone, it's about stuff that's not fully done. Here is an example of a piece of stuff that's not fully done. So you've been warned. Another piece of another thing is, so, sorry, I should have said a little more about the glitches. So basically, these are the major equations. The major equations, I sort of understand, okay? But in each of these classes, there are also some further minor equations or minor relations that, or minor symmetries that are necessary or that you have to impose in order for things to work. So, for example, the mirror image of this picture is its inverse. So So that becomes a certain equation. For example, the generator here, the tetrahedron, has lots of symmetries. The tetrahedron in S3 has many symmetries, right? So you can turn it around, for example, 120 degrees, and it's still a tetrahedron. So there are many equations that, more minor equations, that these objects have to satisfy, symmetries, okay? And these minor equations don't quite match between the different classes. Okay? So, the moral for me is that, it's a bit like the implicit function theorem, okay? I mean, if you know that if you have a function, a sufficiently smooth function on Rn, and you point at a point, and you're at a point which is near zero, you'll know that there is a zero near it, okay? So there is a certain conditions need to be satisfied, don't quote, okay? So likewise here, this is sufficiently near a true theorem that there ought to be a true theorem nearby, okay? But I haven't worked it out, and it's frustrating because it's been years and I haven't worked it out because I keep, you know, every time I promise myself that I will do it by next time I give a class about it, but every time I end up doing other things. So, you can view it positively. You know, if you want to write a paper about it, if you want to sharpen the picture and put it in print, it's much needed. So basically, this column is partially written, this column is fully written, but it's ugly, and the rest of the picture is mostly only oral. Okay, it was never written anywhere. Okay. Okay. Yeah, so I don't know. I wanted to describe the situation, and I did. Okay. Now let's go back to KTGs, and I want to derive the pentagon. Okay. So as I mentioned, KTGs are generated by these generators, or, you know, in fact, it's a bit easier to think of them as generated by the two tetrahedra. So this tetrahedra and the tetrahedron like this, which differs from that one only by framings. Okay? What I want to show you is how a certain relationship between these generators becomes the pentagon, and a certain other relation between the generators becomes the hexagons, and at some point later on, I will tell you how to use this emulation to derive all the relations between these two generators. Okay? So, here is the relation. So, we've agreed that these generate. I hope we've agreed. Okay? Let me just write a relation and just go through it to emphasize that, just to see how one goes through a relation. Okay? So, the relation is as follows. You can take three tetrahedrons, and combine them in a certain way to get a triangular prism. And let me show you how it works. Well, first of all, let's copy the three tetrahedra. Okay, first of all, you do what is called a vertex connect sum between these two vertices. But since the vertex connect sum is not one of the operations that I allowed, let me tell you how to write a vertex connect sum using the operations that are allowed. So first of all, you do connect sum, connect sum along these two edges, connecting these two edges. Then you unzip the edge you've just added. Unzip the edge that you've just added gives you a picture like this. Okay? And then you unzip this edge. So I'm just doing a sequence of, I've started with three copies of the generator, and I'm doing a sequence of operations that are allowed, okay? So I'm unzipping this edge, and I get this picture, okay? The net effect of that was that we took two vertices that were pointing sort of one against each other. Again, topologically, this is meaningless. It's only in the drawing, okay? And replaced them by somehow a three-lane highway that looks like this, okay? Now, do the same for this vertex. Okay? So in fact, I'm doing it twice. Do the same for this pair of vertices, and you'll get a picture like this. Okay? Now, these are specific graphs drawn in S3, in R3. And they're drawn correctly. I mean, I can just do isotopies, okay? So I can pull this edge down, and the picture I now have will look like this. Once I pull this edge down, the picture becomes this picture, am I right? And then I can do an unzip here. Doing an unzip here, I get this picture. And this picture is a triangular prism viewed from above, right? So this is a triangular prism. Okay, but I could also get to the triangular prism by a simpler way. So I could take two tetrahedra. Here is one. Here is the other. And just do a vertex connect sum between these two vertices. Again, a vertex connect sum really means a sequence of three operations, a connect sum and then two unzips. But I've done it already, so I don't need to do it again. Anyway, when you do a vertex connect sum here, you get a picture like this. Okay? And this picture is really, this picture which is again a triangular prism. Now it's viewed from the side, and I suppose sort of this edge was slightly contracted. Okay? So this is again a triangular prism. Okay? So, suppose you were looking for an invariant of KTGs that valued here. You need to look for the value of the tetrahedron. Let's call the value of the tetrahedron, so let's call the image of this, the image via this, via z of the tetrahedron, let's call it phi. And what we've learned is an equation of the form phi cubed, I mean three copies of phi multiplied in a crazy way, is equal to phi squared. And of course you cannot cancel and write phi is equal to 1 because this is a schematic picture of this equation. Okay. So now I want to change this from schematic to real. Okay, I want to actually write this equation. Okay? So first of all, I have to tell you how to write phi, or in what language do I want to write the equation. So phi is a tetrahedron, or phi is a core diagram on the tetrahedral skeleton. And let me remind you that at some point we said that you can swipe clean a tree. So you can just declare that I want this edge clean. Okay? So if you have a chord ending on this edge, you use vertex relation to push it to the other side, to outside of this edge. Likewise, I can swipe this edge clean. Again, now I don't want to push up but only down, because if I push up I dirty the thing that I've already cleaned, so that's no good. But I can still push down. And finally, I want to clean this edge, and again by pushing to the right rather than to the left, because if I push to the left I dirty this one. And after that I cannot do anything more, because any of the remaining edges has a clean edge on either on both sides, so if I try to push stuff off it, I will mess up what I've already cleaned. Okay? So now all my chords end here or here or my eyes are not good enough to remember what my convention was.
Is it going down?
At some point I printed it in a larger size, so here it is. Maybe I'll just copy this. Yes, going down. Or here. Okay? So phi is a chord diagram like this. And now I can, so with all chords ending on these three strands, and now I can think of it as being a chord diagram on three strands, 1, 2, and 3, okay, and well, that's it. So by the way, later, or not later, if I want to use the tensor map associated with some Lie algebra, if I want to convert this into a tensor, I can think of it as a tensor living in, well, remember that each skeleton line becomes a copy of the universal enveloping algebra, so I get a tensor in the cube power of the universal enveloping algebra. Okay? Anyway, okay. Now, I want to write this. Okay, so now I understand phi, but now I want to understand this equation. So first of all, I need to understand the space in which this equation takes values. Okay, the space in which this equation takes values is the triangular prism. So let me declare that in the triangular prism, I will clean this edge, and this edge, and that edge. So again, notice that they form a tree. In fact, they form a line. So I can clean them, and none of the remaining ones can be cleaned. And now let's declare that this edge is called number one. This one is called number two. This one is called number three, and this one is called number four. And now a core diagram on the prism really belongs to A of 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. And again, if I interpret it in a specific Lie algebra, I live in U of G tensor to the fourth. So if I switch to Lie algebras, my unknowns become elements of UG cubed, which needs to satisfy equations written in UG to the fourth. Okay? Anyway, since I want to write this is equal to that, and I want to convert to this language, I must do the same over here. And I must choose the same identification. I must choose the same identification of this graph with A4 as of this graph with A4. So I must copy the numbering from here to here. Okay? So if you copy the numbering, you'll find that you have two edges, that 1 and 2 belong to the top of the prism. The way I did it on the handout is the bottom of the prism. And 3 is parallel to 2, is at the bottom of the prism. And 4 is the other one of the bottom of the prism, sorry, of the top of the prism. So it looks like this. So this will be 2, this will be 3, this will be 4, and this will be 1. Okay? And the rest are the ones that are being cleaned. Okay. Now I want to write the equation. Okay? So, let me invent notation that will make writing the equation a bit easier. Okay? So first of all, I will call the tetrahedrons that appear here A, B, C, and then D and E. Okay? So a more appropriate form of this equation is that phi A, phi B, phi C is equal to phi D, phi E. But this is still still informal. Okay? Now, in each of these tetrahedrons, I will mark the three active edges, the edges that actually have chords on them, or that actually have Lie algebraic information on them after we've cleaned all the rest. Okay? So, I'm following the handout. So for this one, the active edges will be this one, and that one. And again, I'll just keep track
of the different edges, since you know I also have active edges here and here, I will mark them A1, A2, and A3. Okay? And likewise, the edges here will be C1 is going this way, C2 is going this way, and C3 is going that way. And finally, for green, this will be B1, this will be B2, and this will be B3. Okay? So it's a bit cumbersome, but okay, that's what I have to do. Okay? So now let's understand what the operations actually do. Okay? So, you know, remember that this picture is really a short for, you know, there may be chords going between 2 and 3 here, and likewise similar chords going between 2 and 3 here, and yet similar chords going between 2 and 3 here. So they connect some operation, so let's carry out this connect some, let's carry out the operations once again. Okay? So they connect some operation, just inserts an edge without doing anything to the chords. So I still have my A1 here, my A2 here, and my A3 here, and here I still have C1, C2, and C3, and here I still have B1, B2, and B3, and I've just added an empty edge over here to the left of everything that appears in B2. Okay? Then I unzip this edge, but unzipping an empty edge keeps it empty. And then I unzip this edge, but unzipping an empty edge keeps it empty. So the picture is just this. Okay? And likewise here, I do a connect sum and then all the unzips, and I get this picture. And now I have a complicated diagram placed on a funny skeleton, okay? And that skeleton has on it, so the way it is made is, you know, you copy the A phi, put it on this part of the skeleton, you copy the B phi and put it on this part of the skeleton, and you copy the C phi and put it on that part of the skeleton. Now I'm deforming this piece down. Combinatorially, it's the do-nothing operation. So the picture I get is looks like this. Okay. I have A1 here, followed by B1 on this edge. On this edge, I have B2. On this edge, I have C1. Here I have C2, and here I have C3, and I think I missed A2 and A3. Okay. Next, I want to unzip this edge. And this is the first time that I actually have to do something. Okay? Unzipping this edge
means, so remember how unzipping works. Unzipping works like this. Any cord that ends on the edge being unzipped gets doubled. Or rather, you sum over the two ways of lifting it to the two daughter strands. Okay? Or in the Lie algebraic language, what it means is that if you have a word W in the universal enveloping algebra written here, then you write delta of W. Sorry, is it too small? It's probably way too small to be visible. Then you write delta of W. Delta of W is the coproduct applied to W. It lives in the universal across the universal. So you put one universal here and the other here. Okay? In my present notation, the way I will write it is if you have a letter here, the letter just indicates a sequence of chord ends. Okay? I will copy the letter twice, and when two letters appear, when a letter appeared twice inside the diagram, what it means is that whatever used to end here now ends either on one copy or on the other copy, and you sum over all possible ways of making these choices. Okay? So now when I unzip, this becomes, I mean, all that happens is that the B2 get doubled. So I have a B2 here and a B2 here. And now let's compare it with, I've already erased where I wanted to read the answers. I wanted to read the answers here, 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 and here. And fortunately for me, I've done the operations in such a way that no cords ever spilled to places that I wanted to be clean. Okay? So basically the answer is I just have my four strands, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And strand number 1 has on it an A1 and a B1. A1 followed by a B1. Strand number 2 has an A2, a B2, and a C1. And A2, a B2, and a C1. Strand number 3 has on it an A3, a B2, and a C2. So an A3, a B2, and a C2. And strand number 4 has on it something went wrong. Oh, I forgot to copy the B3 from here. Has on it a B3 and a C3. Okay? And now let's interpret this. Let's write it as an equation. So I took 1, 5. Phi lives on 3 strands. Okay? Phi lives here. I took 1 phi, the A phi, and placed it on strands 1, 2, and 3. Okay? So it's phi placed on strands 1, 2, 3. Then I multiplied it. So my convention for multiplication in this algebra is concatenation, and my convention is to go upwards. So then I multiplied it by
another phi in which I've doubled the middle strand. So borrowing notation from Lie algebras, I write it as 1 tensor delta tensor 1, so identity, do nothing to the first strand, apply the coproduct to the second strand, meaning double the second strand, and do nothing to the third strand. All of this applied to phi. And finally, here I have another associator placed on, sorry, another phi, placed on strands 2, 3, and 4. So I'll just write it as phi 2, 3, 4. Okay? So, ooh, I'm way past time. Somebody should have stopped me. What?
I don't have a watch.
I'll continue for one more minute and stop. The point is, this is an equation that can be interpreted as an equation in A of four strands, involving an element phi written in A3, but it also can be interpreted as an equation in UG to the fourth involving an element in UG tensor cubed. And likewise, I can turn this into an equation by exactly the same procedure. I don't know. You just have to run it again and be careful. And the result will be delta tensor 1 of phi times 1 tensor 1 tensor delta of phi. And hence, phi must satisfy this equation, the so-called pentagon. Okay? And and I guess I'll stop here. There is a similar way to derive the hexagons, but later. Okay? Luis?